The 1994 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents session number 266, The Dynamic Yet Static Distribution of Latter-day Saints in 1990, by Lowell C. Ben Benyon.
Hi, my name is Blaine Carlton. It's my pleasure to chair this session. This session happens to be session 266, entitled The Dynamic Yet Static Distribution of Latter-day Saints in 1990. And the presenter today is Lowell Benyon, professor at Humboldt State University. Let me just quickly introduce Dr. Benyon, and then he can begin his presentation, after which we should have enough time for some questions from the audience. To facilitate the question period, either you could come up to the microphone to make certain that the question is articulated and we can get it recorded, or you could ask the question from where you are, and then Dr. Benyon can repeat the question in the microphone and then give the answer. Dr. Benyon received his undergraduate degree at the University of Utah and later received his doctorate degree at Syracuse University in 1971. As I mentioned, he is currently a professor of geography at Humboldt State University in California. He teaches in particular courses involving geography dealing with the United States and Canada, Europe, American-Canadian migrations and ethnic mosaics, and writing about American-Canadian places. He has written several pieces. One is entitled San Pete Scenes, A Guide to Utah's Heart. That was co-authored with Gary B. Peterson, and he currently is working on two books. One is entitled Traversing the Trinity, A Scenic Slice of Northern California, and the second is entitled, which is considerably different than the first, is entitled Plural Wives and Tangled Lives, The Place of Polygamy Among the Mormons. So with that introduction, let me turn the time over to Dr. Benyon.
Thank you, Blaine. This happens to be a first for me. Two firsts, actually. The first time I have ever addressed a Sunstone audience, and the first time I have given a paper without a commentator. I'm happy about both the prospects, though I realize you, the audience, will take the place of a commentator. Most Americans tend to equate geography with Trivial Pursuit. They therefore expect geographers to know the name and location of almost any place on Earth. Imagine the humiliation we experience whenever we miss a question while playing that kind of game, or when we can't answer an inquiry about the capital of Mali, the location of Bali, or the population size of Cali. Mormonism, given its ever-changing geography, lends itself to map analysis. To map, say, the distribution of the LDS temples at first might seem like another exercise in Trivial Pursuit. But if we examine their location relative to that of the membership, we can raise questions which in turn may lead to new insights. Why, for instance, does Europe, with less than 5% of the world membership, rate more than 10% of its LDS temples? Two invitations received during the past year prompted me to prepare four maps that display the distribution of Mormons as of 1990 and 92. The first asked me to reassess Don Meinig's classic essay of the Mormon culture region published nearly 30 years ago. I'll show you a copy of that to refresh your memories or in case you have never seen it. The second involved commenting on a paper Jan Shipps presented to the Western History Association last fall entitled Change, Change, and More Change, the Latter-day Saints Since World War II. Together, these two assignments led me to map the saints of the western states by county with a computer map program, map maker program, and then to revise Meinig's map, the first one that I showed you. And here's the revised version, though it's drawn somewhat differently than the original, making it difficult to compare the two. Once I had mapped the Western Saints, my spatial curiosity got the better of me, and I asked a former student to prepare two cartograms, one making the size of each U.S. state proportional to the size of its LDS population, and the second doing the same for the rest of the world as of January 1st, 1992. And here you see those two maps. Quite different from cartograms showing the distribution of the world's total population, which I will show you later.
That's not proportional.
A preview. Spark your interest. A third invitation, this one from Sunstone, provides me with a chance to integrate all four of these maps into a single paper and to reflect on the dynamic yet static distribution of Latter-day Saints on the eve of the next century and millennium. We can conveniently regionalize Mormondom, those last two maps combined, by grouping the 22 areas currently used to administer the church into six macro regions. I actually prepared a transparency of this little map that appeared in a recent issue of the Church News, but unfortunately left it lying on my desk when I came in this afternoon. But let me pass this around so you can at least get... Yes, and each one is numbered, 22 in total. That's the Church's way of regionalizing the world that it administers. Now, I want to take those 22 areas and group them into six regions, larger regions, macro regions. A North American, which I spell AMER/CAN, a North American region comprises eight areas, two for Utah alone. That region dominates the world map with 55% of the total membership. But it displays the lowest growth rate. The other, but smaller and weaker half of the Mormon world breaks down into five regions. A Latin American region with six areas, three for Middle America, and three for South America looms large with 30% of all LDS and the highest growth rate of any region. A vast and populous Asian region, whose LDS live mainly along the eastern rimland, contains three areas but merely 6% of the church's members. A Europe region, that takes in North Africa and the Middle East, as well as Russia, embraces three broad areas but only 4% of the members. Each of the two remaining regions consists of a single but extensive area with a small number of Mormons. First, the Pacific area, including Australia and New Zealand, as well as the South Pacific Islands, and another 4% of the membership. Second, the Africa area south of the Sahara numbers less than 1% of the 8 million total recorded at the start of 1992. Full appreciation of how unevenly the Latter-day Saints are distributed around the world and what that means for an aspiring universal church requires a closer look at the four maps and a few other graphics. As already implied, both the absolute and relative concentrations of Mormons vary greatly within each region and area, and these configurations keep changing with the widespread in growth rates. In addition, the retention rates and gender ratios among members differ considerably from one area to another. Let me show you just one sample. Here you see the age-sex structure of the U.S. population, Mormon population. And then on the lower graph, you see the gender ratios by the regions indicated, the only one of which, the one with the smallest membership, Africa, that has more males than females. The bar indicates the number of males per 100 females. Only by examining such patterns can we recognize and perhaps resolve the imbalances confronting the expanding but variegated worlds of Mormondom. Let me make the last first and the first last in surveying the six global regions outlined above. For each one, I shall show the map prepared for the new Encyclopedia of Mormonism, so you'll get a larger scale view of that particular region. The small size of sub-Saharan Africa's LDS population will not surprise anyone, given the Church's history of denying blacks the priesthood until 1978. This area has its headquarters and only temple in Johannesburg, South Africa, the state which still has the largest number of members and roughly one-third of Africa's total. Only a dozen of the area's many countries have even a small Mormon presence, and only in two of them, Nigeria and Ghana, has the church thus far experienced enough growth to establish stakes. That growth reflects in part a backlog of West African interest in the church that dates back to the 1960s, but had to await a change in priesthood policy before missionaries could gain entry. The church's gains have strained its relations with Ghana, the first African state to shake off colonial rule in this century, and one that is still wary of any outside influence. Ethnic strains, coupled with the increasing instability, if not anarchy, of many African states, may limit the church's efforts to spread its influence in this heretofore neglected region. Mormon missionaries reached the Pacific area even earlier than South Africa, and the church eventually gained far more converts among Polynesians than Boers or Britons. Five temples may seem like an excessive number for an LDS population of less than 300,000, growing at a rate even slower than Europe's. New Zealand, with as many Mormons as Australia, but less than one-fifth the total population, had the only temple in all of Oceania for 22 years. But 10 years ago, the church built temples in Samoa, Tonga, Tahiti, and Sydney, Australia, to minimize the need for long-distance travel. Perhaps of greater import, three of them symbolize the prominence of Mormons among Polynesians, 25 to 30% in Samoa and Tonga, and 7% in Tahiti, figures that, if valid, match those of Idaho and Arizona, respectively. Even New Zealand's LDS minority, 2.25%, exceeds that of the United States, about 1.75%, a claim only two countries outside of Oceania, both in South America, can make. Lanny Britch attributes the church's strong position in these island societies to effective diplomacy, including an apostolic blessing upon Tonga's king in 1988, mature local leadership, and the impact of its schools. According to one anthropologist, the Mormon Church is one of the largest employers in Tonga outside of the government and has by far the highest education budget of any Tongan church. Nowhere save in Africa and Asia do Mormons occupy such a marginal numerical position as in Europe. Emigration to Zion drained so many converts away from Protestant countries that Europe numbered fewer than 30,000 members in 1950, 40% of them in the two Germanies. A more than tenfold increase since then has led to a second flowering of the church, at least in the United Kingdom, which now claims over 40% of all European Mormons. Germany ranks a distant second, and only the combined membership of continental Europe, without Scandinavia can match that of the UK. Significantly, the Romanic, Roman Catholic countries have had the highest growth rates in recent years, topped by Portugal, half of whose converts are retornados, or former residents of the country's African colonies. Throughout Europe, immigrants have comprised at least half of all converts since 1985. Their presence has given congregations a younger and more cosmopolitan makeup than previous generations have known. But even with this sizable influx of uprooted individuals into the church, Europe's growth rates generally lag well behind East Asia's and Latin America's. One BYU professor blames the low conversion levels of Europe on the region's pervasive secularization and unadulterated prosperity. Yet he anticipates that the Mormons' growing maturity in Western Europe will make it easier for the church to establish congregations in Eastern Europe and Russia, which currently record, as of 1994, only about 6,000 members, despite high expectations held by the church since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Europe's disproportionate number of temples, 7, seems to reflect not only the region's multinational makeup, but also Intermountain Mormon's strong ancestral and mission ties to the church's primary source of converts until 1960. Given its relatively recent penetration of Asia, the church looks as strong as a tiger, at least on paper, as long as one ignores the absence of LDS in the Chinese and Indian realms, which, as you know, hold fully 2/5 of the world's entire population. Not surprisingly, church has fared best in the Philippines, the only Christian nation in East or Southeast Asia, and probably the one most influenced by American society. Filipinos make up more than half of Asia's Mormons, followed by Japanese, Koreans, 55% of them males, interestingly enough, and Chinese, mainly from Hong Kong and Taiwan rather than Singapore. Each of these four populations now has a temple, reflective of their growing numbers. Apart from Mexico, however, Asia also has the lowest retention rates in the church, as measured in 1980 by the percent of adult males who had received the Melchizedek priesthood. That means missionaries in, say, Japan must spend much of their time trying to reactivate so-called inactives. One couple who returned from Quezon City in the Philippines a year ago reported that only 30% of their mission's members were active, and 90% of those were females. They also told the story of one inactive male who had been baptized several times over a period of many years. When asked why, he smiled and replied, "Because it makes the elders so happy." The 6 church areas with the highest growth rates in recent years all belong to the region of Latin America. And for that vast region, the other Americas, I have 2 maps. One for Middle America without the Caribbean, and the other for South America. The 9 LDS temples now completed or planned represent the countries with the largest numbers of saints within their respective areas. Mexicans alone make up more than 1/4 of the total. Perhaps due to the church's head start there, and because the country's glorification of the Indian has given the Book of Mormon special appeal. The church's schools have also worked to its advantage here and throughout Latin America. Even so, a majority of Mexican members have dropped out, prompting local leaders to encourage more care in screening prospective members and in retaining converts. Chile, which had only 25,000 LDS in 1976, now numbers more than 300,000. This gives it not only the highest Mormon percent, nearly 2.5 in Latin America, but also the highest growth rate among all churches. The visibility of the LDS church's missionaries and chapels makes them easy targets for terrorists who view any kind of American influence as imperialism. Church's very first mission in Chile in 1851-52 failed, but its leader, Parley P. Pratt, once composed a hymn entitled Imperial Zion. Wish I could sing it for you. a Mormon version of the American creed of manifest destiny that sometimes triggers violent reactions like those that have often accompanied LDS expansion in Latin America. As one BYU sociologist, not David Knowlton, has concluded, in the end, the nature of Mormonism dictates either a continuation of marginal status with low retention and frequent public strain with host societies, or some fundamental changes within the tradition. Which course will be taken remains to be seen. Such a statement makes the Church's position outside of North America sound precarious and its chances for further expansion problematic. Clearly, the regions it has penetrated most effectively thus far are the very same ones that have proved most receptive to the proselytizing of Protestant churches and the Protestant ethic. In 1972, the same year that he dedicated the new church office building, now administration building, President Harold B. Lee declared, "No longer should this church be thought of as the Utah church or as an American church. For the church is now distributed over the earth in 78 countries, teaching the gospel in 17 different languages at the present time. This greatly expanded church population is today our most challenging problem. And while we have cause for much rejoicing in such a widespread expansion, it does pose some great challenges to the leadership of the church to keep pace with the many problems." The new LDS president, Howard W. Hunter, could easily make the same statement, changing and increasing only the numbers of countries and languages in which Mormon missionaries teach their restored gospel. The higher numbers clearly signify an increasingly international church. President Hunter has, in fact, declared that the church is now a world religion, not simply because its members are found throughout the world, but chiefly because it has a comprehensive and inclusive message based upon the acceptance of all truth, restored to meet the needs of all mankind. Let me, at this point, show you the world population in cartogram form. How's that? Don't try to pick up all of those numbers, but just get a general sense of where the world's population is as we return to the maps showing where the Mormon population is. Yes. There you can see how large the Indian and Chinese realms loom, with 40% of the total. At the same time, the 1992 U.S. cartogram, when shown at the same scale as the world cartogram, suggests that Mormonism remains not only a North American religion, but a regional faith still concentrated in the West and centered on Utah. I wish I had a map that had both of these cartograms on the same page. Moreover, the general pattern of LDS distribution within the United States has changed remarkably little during the past two decades compared to the explosive growth of the church in Africa, East Asia, Latin America, even Europe and Oceania. Such a comparison makes the American pattern seem almost static, even though subtle but significant changes have occurred within the U.S. One such change, often overlooked, reflects both the global expansion of Mormonism and the continuing magnetism of America. A map prepared by Jesse L. Emery for the Historical Atlas of Mormonism that Simon & Schuster will publish next month displays by state or province, in the case of Canada, the distribution of some 300 branches, wards, organized by the church for five broad groups of ethnic Americans and Canadians. Spanish speakers form the largest single group, followed by Asians, Polynesians, and Europeans. More than 10% of the units, more than 70% of the units function within the West, excluding Texas, with California dwarfing all other states, even Utah. What the map unfortunately does not reveal is what percent of these ethnic Mormons joined the church in the U.S. or in their homelands. Almost 80% of all U.S. Mormons reside within the 13 western states, including Alaska and Hawaii. Except for Texas, Florida, and Virginia, which is tied to Washington, D.C., no eastern state has as many LDS as New Mexico or Hawaii, each with about 50,000. These three eastern anomalies, which include more than half of the South Saints, are high-growth states where many Western Mormons have found employment. In addition, the South, as Armin Moss has pointed out, has produced more than its share of LDS converts in recent years. The two factors combined give the South more than twice as many LDS as the religiously depressed North, if I may describe it in that way, which has fewer saints than Arizona alone. All but two of the 15 states with three or fewer stakes, LDS stakes, lie in the North. The North, of course, contains the four hearts that gave birth to Mormonism, yet the faith has only recently regained a foothold in the areas that ousted it a century and a half ago. The North even has the same number of temples, four, as the South, if one counts Toronto's and assigns the D.C. temple to the South. Why, then, does the Mormon diaspora remain quite weak within the East? Even within the American West, nearly 80% of all Western LDS live within the eight Intermountain states centered on Utah. Another pattern that has changed little since 1972. In 1990, Utah counted almost twice as many Mormons as California, and Arizona, Idaho, and Nevada together fell just below California's number. To restate the question just raised, how can one explain American Mormons' strong preference for the West, particularly the Great Basin, Rocky Mountain region? Any attempt to answer this question should involve mapping such basic variables as fertility, mortality rates, migration patterns, and conversion apostasy ratios. Perhaps only the church's research department has such data, but they undoubtedly will not release them to scholars who can only speculate on the basis of impressionistic evidence. Based on my own limited network of contacts, I sense a strong pine for Zion syndrome among Eastern, Western, and even international LDS. Whether cons or bics, cons being converts, bics being born in the church members. Many Intermountain Mormons who have gone to the Pacific Coast or to the Eastern states for school or work eventually return, often as retirees and or equity migrants. That is, they cash in their California or Florida home and buy something comparable or nicer for much less in the Intermountain West. This continuing influx of returnees and newcomers, coupled with the area's relatively high rates of natural increase and even convert baptisms, offsets the outmigration from Zion and the new members gleaned by missionaries elsewhere in the West or East. Thus, while LDS leaders have tried throughout the 20th century to stop the gathering, they have never quite succeeded, not even by building more and more temples as growth poles or growth spires outside of the Mormon homeland. The homeland itself has experienced significant changes since Meinig first delineated the MCR, the Mormon culture region, in a definitive way. Here's my revised version of his MCR. Once again, most of you are probably from the Intermountain West and therefore sense these changes, maybe even better than I do. So I'll try to describe them very quickly. Within this Mormon excuse me, let me back up. A comparison of Meinig's map with this revised version based on 1998 data reveals both continuity and change. His core area, defined as a hive of high densities and a hub of intense interaction, remains centered on the Wasatch Front. Its four counties contain more than three-fourths of both the state's population and Utah's Mormons, not counting the spillover into all adjoining counties. The core's share of U.S. Mormons has declined from 40 to 28% since 1965, but it still includes more than half of the MCR's saints. No wonder the church has placed five new temples within 50 miles of its Mecca. Within this Mormon megalopolis, Provo Orem at the southern end has eclipsed the declining railroad hub of Ogden to the north, which now plans to revitalize itself as a convention center. The rise of Provo Orem as the home of BYU and numerous computer companies has intensified its rivalry with Salt Lake, expressed most keenly in the competition between the church's Y and the state's U. If we define the domain exclusive of the core as those counties with a Mormon majority, a slightly different region emerges from the one mapped by Meinig. Many rural counties of Utah have a population whose LDS percentage exceeds the Beehive State's average of 72. But in Summit County, to the east, Mormons barely make up a majority, 53%, because the old mining town of Park City, now Utah's wealthiest per capita, has attracted droves of artists and skiers from outside the state. We have to delete both San Juan and Grand counties from the domain, where the percent is only 30 to 40% LDS. There, Mormons and non-Mormons have struggled over land and water rights since 1880. The church has tried in vain to capture the southeast corner of Utah from ranchers, farmers, Navajos, and more recently from artists and recreationists lured to the canyonlands. Mormons have had more success over the border in both Nevada's and Wyoming's Lincoln County, and of course in neighboring southeast Idaho. Even there, two counties centered on Pocatello fall short of a Mormon majority. As Meinig noted, in a numerical and narrow sense, this rural domain is the most thoroughly Mormon area of all. His generalization still holds, even though the domain's share of the nation's LDS has dropped from 28 to 11%. Ironically, the all-powerful Wasatch Front, especially Utah County, has become more Mormon and conservative in recent decades by draining off much of the domain's population. The domain's relative decline made me think the church would add no more temples to the four old ones located within the region. Imagine my surprise when I learned of the decision to convert the old Vernal Tabernacle into a temple. Beyond the domain lies the sphere of influence, the largest area of the MCR, which now has more Mormons than the domain, with 15% of all U.S. saints. The exact extent of the sphere depends on how one decides just where the LDS form a conspicuous, cohesive minority in areas where they are mostly scattered rather than strongly clustered. One geographer, who also served as a cartographic editor for the Atlas of Utah, included all areas where Mormons comprise 5 to 50% of the population. I have raised his lower limit to 10, thereby shrinking his sphere considerably, but extending Meinig's to reflect expansion outward since 65. Either way, in an area whose population is largely unchurched, the Latter-day Saints generally make up the largest or second largest denomination, even with only 5 or 10% of the total population. In response to the sphere's growth, the church has constructed new temples in Boise and Las Vegas, giving it a total of 5, counting those in Hawaii and Alberta. The odd juxtaposition of a Mormon temple and gambling casinos in Las Vegas symbolizes the continuing tension between the two peoples within the MCR, or to use Mouse's apt metaphors, between the angel and the beehive. Just as the United States still records at least half of the church's membership, so the Mormon culture region still numbers at least half of the American saints. Moreover, of all the six regions into which we have divided Mormondom, North America has the highest retention of members and Utah the highest of all the states or provinces. The higher levels of activity among American and especially MCR Mormons simply reinforce this region's preeminence and recreate the same kind of geopolitical and socioeconomic imbalance that characterizes the world as a whole. At the April 1994 General Conference, one apostle admitted as much when he said he told a meeting of church leaders in a country outside of North America that the Lord was grieved that only a small fraction of the members in their nations relied on the Lord's promises and paid a full tithing. At the same session, a colleague made the more general observation that one major concern of the general authorities is the lack of retention in full fellowship of many new converts and those who are less active in the church. The makeup of the general authorities also mirrors the predominance of Intermountain Americans in the operation of the global church. All 15 members of the highest echelon of the hierarchy are products of the Mormon culture region, or in two cases, Elder Scott and Hales, have close family ties to it as part of the Mormon American diaspora, those outside of the MCR. Of the 66 70s who presently preside over the church's 22 areas, only 16 are not North Americans, and only 4 of them serve as area presidents. Europe and Asia both have 4 representatives. Latin America has 8, but Oceania and, of course, Africa have none. Judging by a recent comment of President Hunter, the church senses this imbalance that has resulted in part simply from its rapid growth and the lack of experienced leadership. He predicts, and I quote, increasing responsibility for stake and ward leaders and the rise of more people from various cultures to the ranks of general authorities. We'll have to wait and see. Not since 1952, when Elder John A. Witzow passed away, as the church had an apostle born outside of the United States or Canada. Pardon? Yes, that's true. But I would say not until non-North Americans reach the very highest, the top 15 level, we'll wait. We'll just have to wait. But until that happens, and who knows when, and the distant and diverse peripheries can begin to bridge the gap between them and the strong and controlling center, the church seems likely to remain a largely American or intermountain faith, even as North America's share of the membership shrinks. This is the other and weaker half for one final viewing. If that pessimistic conclusion disturbs those impatient for the vision of a worldwide church to become a reality, let me in closing make 3 bold suggestions for lessening the imbalance between the 2 unequal halves of the church. First, if growth is the church's primary problem, then take steps to grow more slowly, but in the long run, more strongly. Second, expand the church's humanitarian projects and devote as much missionary time to such projects as to actual proselytizing. Finally, create sister stake alliances, like sister city unions, that link in practical ways the stronger wards of North America with the weaker ones throughout the world, even within the United States. Those ethnic wards and branches that I showed you earlier. After all, as early as 1832, Joseph Smith received a revelation commanding members of the infant church to acquire sufficient knowledge and appreciation of the world's countries and cultures that they would be well prepared to magnify their calling as missionaries. Part of that preparation may also require that MCR members somehow become less provincial and more cosmopolitan. Thank you.
Questions?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't seen anything to indicate that the presence of LDS servicemen in Europe, now shrinking, has influenced the disproportionate number of temples within that region. Certainly they are a part, have been since World War II, an important part of the total church membership and leadership, at least within certain areas, local areas. Yes, it undoubtedly influenced the specific location of that first and only West German temple. But that also reflects Frankfurt's position as the hub, in many ways, a transportation financial hub of continental Europe, as well as to improve the marginal status of Mormons, of the church, say in Latin America. He thinks the church has to adapt its approach. It has to decentralize, to give Latin American members more opportunity to develop their own version of Mormonism.
And is that a problem all over the world?
And I think that's a global problem, yes. I'll be happy to give you the reference to that essay, which actually it appears in the new book called Contemporary Mormonism, which will be the focus of a session tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Lou, another question. I do not have figures that would indicate, off the top of my head, that would indicate what percent of other major metropolitan areas' population belongs to a particular denomination, be it Jewish, Roman Catholic, or something else. Generally, the Northeast is the most Catholic region of the country, along with the South, the Hispanic Southwest, Chicano Southwest. Maybe Mel Hammerberg can help me. The Upper Midwest happens to be the most Lutheran and maybe the most Protestant. The National Council of Churches has prepared a map every 10 years that shows the relative
involved in the Hmong branch in St. Paul, Minnesota. The 30% of the city of St. Paul are Hmong people, refugees, who were brought over from Southeast Asia. There are also a large Laotian population located in the Twin Cities, and there's a Spanish population. For the last about 3 years, there's been, I think it first started in our ward in 1990, while my husband and I were gone. The missionaries started tracting in the housing projects in among families and realized that they had to talk to these people. So they started learning the language, and gradually they started needing to come out to church, so they became an adjunct branch to the St. Paul Second Ward. When we came back from being gone for 6 months, there were 90 people that were coming out to church. Now some of these people, we've seen them come in one door and go out the other, but as core people remain. A few core people have remained, and one elder came back to Minnesota to go to school there, and he's retained contact with the branch, and through his efforts, he's helped retain some of the core families, and they are in leadership positions now. But growing out of that, having to meet this unusual. Circumstance. It's been interesting to watch because we've had to adapt the program to meet the children's, the branch's needs. With children running up and down the aisles and making noise, no one could hear. So we have a preschool program that takes the children out after sacrament. And that's one adaptation. Another interesting thing that's happened recently, one of the men in the stake is a principal of a school that has a lot of Hmong people in the school. So he asked the missionaries if they would come to the PTA meetings and help translate for Hmong people who wanted to become active in the PTA because the adults mostly don't speak English. And he has done that. And my visiting teacher came to visit me the day before I left St. Paul and was expressing a problem in her school for ESL programs. And then I recalled that this other brother had used the missionaries as a liaison with the members, and they went in not as proselytizing missionaries, but as a public service project in that community. So I think there is a great pressure to adapt programs. If they're going to succeed, they have to adapt to the needs of the local levels.
Thank you, Don. I would agree, though I find it hard to believe that 30% of St. Paul's population is Hmong. If I took that now 9 million as opposed to 8 million 4 or 5 years ago figure, I would guess maybe 50%, close to 50% of the North American membership is active or semi-active, depending on how you want to define that. For the rest of the world, I would say, especially outside of Europe and Oceania, I would say it's much closer to 25%, perhaps even lower. I accept the church's statistics as published in the Almanac, but every once in a while I have occasion to question them. For example, the total U.S. membership is, I think, about 100,000 or 200,000 higher than the number I get if I add up the total for each state. And I suspect the discrepancy results from the fact that there are that many missing Mormons. The church does not know where they are, but they still count them as a part of the total. The anthropologist whom I quoted with reference to Tonga had a lower figure, maybe 10 or 12% of Tonga's population that is LDS compared to the church's 25%. He said one authority, local authority, acknowledged that the church's count included many Tongans who now live in the United States. So I think we get caught up in the numbers game. We pay too much attention to those numbers. And it's only when missionaries and mission presidents get carried away and baptize people, anybody who will go under, that they pull back. I talked to a nephew last night who was in Portugal in the late 80s. And when President Hinckley came through and discovered that only 20% of all of those new members were still in the church, dropped out almost as fast as they had come in, he tried to change policy. And I think the church needs to do more of that. Because in the long run, I think it will be more effective, develop stronger units that ultimately will move from marginal to permanent status if they do that. Take the case of Outer Mongolia, now the Republic of Mongolia. Earlier in the week we talked to two of the first couples called to open up that area to LDS influence by invitation of the government. The church handpicked the couples, half a dozen couples, and soon after, a small number of missionaries. But not as proselytizers. And so while performing the providing the services, medical, educational services that the government wants, they have limited proselytizing to part-time activity. And it seems to me that after they have done well and from their account built up a small but remarkably strong branch in just a year and a half. They now have 105 members in spite of that language barrier. And these people are well-educated by Mongolian standards. They're generally young. They're all... I didn't sense any falling away. Would you... Mainly studies that examine the rapid expansion of Protestantism, evangelical churches. The Assemblies of God, for example, have 10 times as many members in Latin America as the LDS Church. And David Knowlton and others who have examined this more closely than I have suggested a combination of factors, conditions that make these particular areas, societies at this time receptive to Protestantism in general, but also Mormonism. And they emphasize those factors would emphasize the weakness of the Catholic Church in particular in responding to the needs of its members brought on by the rapid modernization of Latin American societies. Again, I can provide a reference or two. With luck, this presentation, Sunstone may publish this presentation, and then you'll have the numbers, the maps, some of the maps, and more detailed explanations. Please. Nadine, come forward. I hope some of you at least heard her presentation yesterday.
I don't know if this answers that question at all, but... at Sunstone West in Burbank last March, Marie Cornwall spoke, and they've done this all the study about sociological study about Mormonism, and she said that in the United States, converts are people who are religious but unchurched. So they're people who have been raised in some church but who no longer have any church affiliation. And I would guess that same kind of dynamic goes on around the world, so that in Latin America, where the Catholic Church no longer holds the position in the people's minds that it once did, but the people still are Christians, that they are a fruitful field for proselytizing, whether by us or by Protestant evangelicals, and probably in Europe, people are so secular that it makes it a much more difficult area to proselytize.
That's a better answer to your question, Marianne. We are. Our time has lapsed. Thank you very much for your interest and your questions.